Live. Here we are. Oh my goodness. I'm so tired of all the tech preparation, you know.
You're a technical wizard.
Oh my gosh. Now mixing together, I start to make some confusion. But we are live on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, Twitch, and we are live also on Clubhouse. I hope you guys can hear what I say in Clubhouse. I will assume that it is like that. So we'll have a chat, and then I will try to open the Clubhouse mic and see if there are some interesting questions there. So, number one, are you in lockdown or not?
Well, we are in lockdown, yes. But, I mean, you can still go outside. It's just the, you know, bookshops, clothes shops are closed. But, you know, supermarkets are open. You can go for a walk. You can go for a run. But sort of a semi-hard lockdown, I would say, we're in Copenhagen.
All right, got it. Because we are in UK, we are still in lockdown. Do you have kids?
No, not yet.
Okay. Because in UK is lockdown plus kids are at home, so there is homeschooling and it's the third lockdown, and I thought, well, I need to talk with you because I start to be unhappy. Completely unhappy about the lockdown. So I need some advice about this. But jokes aside, it's really a tricky period. This one, I don't know. How do you make a sense of all of this year of pandemic?
I think I try to do what I usually do. So perhaps your listeners should know I run something called the Happiness Research Institute here in Copenhagen. And I know it sounds like a magical place and people imagine we have a room full of puppies and a room full of ice cream. Unfortunately, that's not the case. So we look at data, we look at science, we look at evidence, we look at studies, and we try to have a scientific approach to happiness and well-being. And I think the same rules apply this year and last year as they usually do. I encourage people to do something active. We encourage people to do something meaningful, and I encourage people to see how they can decouple well-being and wealth. So finding activities, finding something you can do that brings you joy or pleasure or well-being or happiness or purpose that doesn't cost anything. So for me personally, I enjoy spending a lot of time in the kitchen. I enjoy cooking. And that's something that is something I can do whether there is a pandemic going on or not. And I think this year during the pandemic, it's important to understand and distinguish what can I control and what can't I control. So I cannot control a global pandemic, but I can control what we're having for dinner tonight, which is spaghetti bolognese, by the way. So I think understanding the difference between what I can and cannot control is the first step in a pandemic.
I love it. When did you start to research happiness? Because on one side is a great topic. On the other side, every time you meet someone, now everyone think that you are the happiest man in the world. And if you are not so happy, what's going on? You know, like it's I think it's hard after a while.
Right. So I think it was the Times, a UK paper that wrote, I was probably the happiest man in the world. I might be one of the candidates, but of course I have good days and I have bad days like everybody else. I started working with happiness 8 years ago. So before working for the Happiness Research Institute, I worked for another think tank in Copenhagen. But started to notice how much was happening globally with happiness and politics and happiness research. So the UN had passed a happiness resolution. They started to sort of commission the World Happiness Report. Denmark was always doing quite well in different happiness rankings and also in the World Happiness Report. And I thought, why is that? Why is Denmark and Norway and Sweden always doing well in these happiness rankings? There should be somebody looking into that. And then I thought, maybe I should do that. and I just couldn't let go of the thought of working with happiness as a career. And I had all these ideas to all the different sort of studies you could do within well-being and happiness. I also thought, so this was back in 2012, you know, just in the wake of the financial crisis, maybe it's also, you know, a little bit risky to start something as crazy as a happiness research institute. And back then I had a steady, well-paying job. But then on the personal side, what happened was a good friend of mine and a colleague I looked up to unfortunately became very ill and died when he was very young, when he was 49. And my own mother had also died when she was 49. So I just started to reflect, you know, what if I only turn 49 and what will I spend my next 15 years, which I had left back in 2012 until I would be 49. You know, I could continue with this job, which is fine, but I'm not super passionate about it. Or I can start what might be a risky venture, but something I just felt a lot of energy around and something I could be really passionate around. And then a few months after the thought first occurred to me, I essentially quit and started out. And at first it was just me, a good idea and a bad laptop. But now we are 10 people at the Happiness Research Institute trying to figure out how we measure happiness, why are some people happier than others, and how can we improve quality of life. And I think no matter what is going to happen in the rest of my career, that decision to start the Happiness Research Institute is probably going to be the best decision that I'm going to make professionally.
Got it. I've read, I think a couple of years ago, about this study. I don't know if it was a study from your institute or not, but it was, they declared it was the longest study about happiness. And they tried to follow all people around the world and ask questions and surveys during their lifespan. I don't know if my memory is just wrong, or I was just curious about your opinion on how you track happiness, because you can ask me now in this moment, I'm super happy to be here talking with you, but maybe, you know, in 30 minutes we finish to speak and I don't know, I get cross and I'm really unhappy or I get a bad news.
Right.
So how do you track happiness?
Well, first we must understand that happiness is a dish with many different ingredients, like bolognese, right? So happiness is how you feel right now, what kind of mood, what kind of emotions you experience right now, which can be very volatile. And you can see people are happier in the moment. They have more positive emotions on Fridays than they do on Mondays. But that's one dimension of happiness. Another dimension is how satisfied we feel about our lives, how happy you are overall. A third dimension is whether you have a sense of purpose or meaning in life. That builds on Aristotle's perception of the good life, and he thought the good life is the meaningful life. So we look at different components when it comes to happiness or the good life. The same way, if we talked about how is the economy in Italy, we would also break that down into growth, GDP per capita, inflation, unemployment rate, and so on. And that gives us a language to talk about how is Italy's economy doing. And that's also what we need to do with happiness. Break it down, look at different components. So happiness is a dish with many different ingredients. It is what kind of emotions we feel here and now, both positive and negative ones. But it's also an overall life satisfaction. It's the sense of purpose and meaning in our lives. It's the sense of connection we have with other people. So we break it down. And yes, as you mentioned in that study, we follow people over time to see how changes in people's lives impact these different dimensions of happiness. So the study you refer to is conducted by Harvard. And I was not part of that because it's been going on for 80 years, so a little before my time.
Very long study.
But there is a lot of studies that are doing exactly that, follow the same group of people over time, ask them again and again how happy they are, how satisfied they are with life, what sense of purpose they have, and so on. And then you can start to see when you follow a large enough group of people, a lot of different things happen in people's lives. You know, people get married, people get divorced, people have kids, people get promoted, people get fired, people move to Brighton. And then you see what is the average impact, for instance, of having kids when it comes to life satisfaction or happiness or sense of purpose. So that's how you measure it. You break it down, you look at different components, and then you follow people over time to see how these different well-being ingredients change over time.
Last week, I think I read just the title of an article, and it referred to the classic research that I think in US anchor happiness to $75,000 earning. So that after $75,000, your happiness doesn't change. It's something like that. But then the study say, no, we track. And if you are really rich, you're really more happy, you know. So what do you think about this this money topic? Where money sits in this discussion?
So I mean, it again depends on which dimension of happiness we look at. So if you look at happiness as a sense of purpose, money doesn't matter. You know, if you win the lottery or if you double your income, you're not going to have a stronger sense of purpose or meaning in life. Money does matter for the overall life satisfaction. So we can see on average, when it comes to both countries and individuals, yes, richer people are on average more satisfied with life. But there is what is called a diminishing marginal return when it comes to money, which means that the more we have of something, if we get one additional thing of that, the less pleasure we get from it, right? So again, tonight with the spaghetti bolognese, you know, first portion of spaghetti is going to be marvelous. Portion number four, not as good, right? And it's the same with money. The first money you get, tremendously important. You know, puts a roof over your head, puts spaghetti bolognese on the table. But if you're already making €1 million per year and you get an additional €1,000, it's not going to impact your life, right? So the thing with money is being without money is a cause of unhappiness. If you can't put food on the table, of course, that is a source of worry and stress and anxiety and unhappiness. But after a certain level, additional income is not going to impact how you feel.
Right. Well, and you're coming out with a new book, or am I right?
I'm always coming out with new books. So I'm not sure which which language your listeners or viewers
the version is coming out in March or something like that.
Right. So I've written a couple of books, and the first book was called The Little Book of Hygge, which is very difficult to pronounce for non-Danish speakers, but it's basically the art of creating a nice atmosphere, which of course happens everywhere, but which is a sort of a Danish value, a key part of our cultural DNA. And then my second book was called The Little Book of Lykke, which is
the color, by the way.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a Scottish design agency that had not designed books before, which we got to design my books. But this one is the Little Book of Lykke is a treasure hunt around the world for happiness. So what are people doing well in France, in Italy, in Japan, in Bhutan when it comes to well-being and happiness? So we look at money, we look at freedom, we look at work-life balance, and what can we learn from each other. And then recently I published something called The Art of Making Memories. So, you know, how can we create happy moments and how can we become better at holding on to the happy moments we would like to stick to?
Got it. So. I like your branding and theme of your covers. They're very recognizable. So once I get the first one, bam, I'm it feels like a series inside a
you can see them as the trilogy, like Lord of the Rings, but less orcs and less jewelry having to be returned, right?
Lord of the Rings. And there was a question here in the chat, and then I'll go on Clubhouse if you have some questions for. How do you pronounce your name?
Mike Viking.
Mike. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just spelled in a weird way.
All right. Got it. If you have a question for Mike in Clubhouse, well, just ping me and I'll try to get you on board. I'll get David here. Very good. So there was a question before in the Facebook chat about happiness and goals, goal settings. At the beginning of the year, usually people say, all right, I set my goals, I have my list, I will achieve this, I go in front of the mirror and I smile and I'll be successful. Does all of these things matter with happiness, according to your research?
Yes and no. So I think having goals is great. And I think it also is part of being human. You know, we are the only species that will look at Mars into the distant universe and think, you know, how do we get a man up there or how do we get a woman up there? And it's what has pushed us forward as a species. And once we're really, really good at setting goals. And sometimes we're fortunate enough to achieve those goals. And yes, then we will be happy with that for a while. And then we're going to set a new goal. There is something in happiness research called the hedonic treadmill. And that is that mechanism that we constantly raise the bar for what we feel we need in order to be happy. And it's with a lot of things in life. It could be with our salary or a promotion or, I understand you have a lot of Facebook followers, half a million or something like that.
Yeah, 2.5 million online.
2.5 million, right? And earlier you probably had a goal of having a million followers, and then you got to that goal, and then the new goal was 2 million. Now you have 2.5 million. You probably have a secret goal of having 10 million followers. And you're probably going to be happy when you achieve that for a while, but then you're going to set a new goal. And goals are great. They drive us forward, and then we can celebrate that goal when we achieve it. But we are very good at setting a new goal soon thereafter. So I think it's useful to know there is no one goal we can accomplish that is going to make us forever happy. So it's coming back to that whole cliche of enjoying the journey, not the destination. I think it's tremendously important, because when you get to the 10 million followers or the 100 million, you're just going to set a new number. So make sure you also enjoy the journey along the way.
My next goal, Mike, is 1 billion, and that's it.
But then it's going to be 7 billion, right? Or how many people we are on the planet now? And Mars. You gotta have Mars. You have 1 billion on Earth, but how many do you have on Mars? Really?
Mars. I have a couple of person on Clubhouse. I'll start with Rosanna, if you can hear us. Rosanna.
Yes, hi.
Oh, hello. Very good.
Thanks, Marco, for letting me in. I have a question for Mike. So I'm Italian. I live in Stockholm, actually. And I was really curious. I was very curious because you mentioned Denmark and Sweden and some of the Nordic countries ranking quite high in the happiness ranking, right? Now I'm very curious about your opinion, because I am from Southern Italy and I'm married to a Swedish, and I've been living here for quite some number of years. I kind of find it very hard to believe that. What's the secret? How do you, I'm curious.
Rosanna, why you say, because Swedish men are not so happy? That's what you mean?
No, I mean, it's more about the lifestyle, and it's not about the people, right? Individual people. It's more like what you see in the streets. I live in a big city, and it's hard to believe. You know, when you walk in the streets of Rome, where I come from, you get that feeling of, people are kind of shouting, they're screaming, sure. It's crowded, it's messy, but you also see people smiling, you see people interacting with each other, and interaction among people, for me, it is a signal of, positivity. I don't see that here. It's very difficult to find that, that intersocial interaction, if you see what I mean. So my question, if precise is that how do you measure that happiness? And why do you think I don't see that? And why do you think Sweden is ranking so high?
Interesting. Great question, Rosanna. Thank you.
Great question, Rosanna. So when we hear the Nordic countries are the happiest in the world, one of the reasons for that is the World Happiness Report. And that measures the overall life satisfaction. So people are asked directly how happy they are overall, or how satisfied they are with life. And then a national average is calculated. So it means those countries have a high national average. So you could call the Nordic countries the happiest in the world. You could also turn it around and say perhaps they are the least unhappy. Because I think one of the reasons why we see this picture is the Nordic welfare model is really good at reducing causes for unhappiness. So there's access to healthcare, there's access to university education, there's relatively good pension schemes, good unemployment benefits, and so on. And it means a lot of the reasons why people often are unhappy is reduced. So you bring up, you lift up the bottom, that brings up the average, and that's why these countries come out on top. That's part of the explanation. There's a lot of other factors, but let's move on to the smiling thing, because I think that is really, really interesting. And I've noticed the same thing you have noticed as well. So for a couple of years, I did studies around the world, basically collecting data on smiling in the streets. So I visited 20 different cities globally. I went to Milan and Rome as well. I think I have Stockholm, I have Guadalajara in Mexico, I have Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and different places.
Milan was easy. I'm from Milan originally, and we never smile. That's it. It's easy. I mean, we just are always cross.
But I remember Milan. I saw the highest share of people holding hands.
Really? Wow.
A lot of romance in Milan. So I would randomize who we would observe. So we would say, okay, the first person who comes around the corner, that's the person we observe. If there's two people, we'll take the one on the right. And then you observe them for at least 5 seconds. You note down whether they smile. What are they doing? Are they talking on the phone? Are they in company with other people? Are they having a coffee? What's going on? And then you start to see, I collected more than 10,000 observations. And then you start to see what are the patterns here. And no big surprise, one of the factors for whether people are smiling or not is whether they are walking together with other people. So if you're walking with somebody else, you're much more likely to smile. If you're walking by yourself smiling, people think you might be a little bit crazy, right? So the more frequent people are walking with other people, the higher the frequency of smiles. The highest level I saw was in Kuala Lumpur. I think it was around 12% of people smiling there. I think one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of people smiling in Sweden, you're based in Stockholm, is Nordic people are usually labeled as fairly introverted emotionally. So we don't show a lot of emotion. That said, we can also see there are different cultural interpretations of what smiling means. So in the West, and especially in the US, smiling is seen as something positive. That's not necessarily the case everywhere. So in a lot of Eastern European cultures, smiling may not be only positively associated. I think it's a Russian saying that goes, if you smile, you're not that intelligent. So to me, smiling is not necessarily the same as feeling happy, because I can feel very happy without smiling, and I can smile without being happy. So for me, smiling is more a tool for communication. And we can also see that's one of the easiest way to get somebody to smile is to smile at them. So smiling, I think, is super interesting, super complex. It's also interesting to see. I've watched myself do interviews in Danish and in English, as this one, and my facial expressions are very different if I speak my second language English compared to my first language. So when I speak English, I look very grumpy. I need to concentrate more when I speak English compared to Danish, and it means I get a grumpy look on my face. So there's also that element whether people are speaking their first language, I think, or their second language.
I love the distinction between happiness and smiling, because I think there is a lot of misunderstanding about it. We have a lot of questions on Clubhouse, so I will ask you all the people asking a question on Clubhouse. Juicy, if you start, short question, short answer, so I can give space to everyone. Thank you. Hey, Juicy.
Hi, Marco. Hi, Mike. Thank you for inviting me. I have a question for you. Actually, I was thinking during these days of unhappiness because I live in London and I feel very, very frustrated because of this lockdown. It's very difficult to deal with it. And during these days, I was just wondering why sometimes it's so difficult to appreciate what you have. So you feel unhappy, and at the same time, I feel like I'm constantly worrying about the next part of my life without realizing that I'm right in the middle of what I used to look forward to, what I wanted a few years ago. So I have now the life that I wanted a few years ago, but I still feel like I'm missing something, and it will be much, much more easier just thinking, okay, you got whatever you wanted, why you feel unhappy?
Right. So
I think this one, Mike, if you have it, this is only for premium subscribers.
No, but I think it's not just a million-dollar question, it's a universal question.
Yeah.
I think we are all feeling that from time to time. So there is a poem written 700 years ago by a Persian poet, I think it was called Hafiz, who, it's two lines, but it's something along the lines, I wish I could show you when you are in darkness, the incredible light of your own being. And I really like that poem because it shows how universal and timeless that sense of despair is. What you are feeling right now, Hafiz felt 700 years ago, and we all feel from time to time. And I think it's incredibly important for us happiness researchers to underline that we all feel unhappy from time to time. Hopefully there's good days, hopefully there's good years, but we all have bad days and we all have bad years. I think for a lot of people, 2020 was a bad year. And that's part of the human experience. We at the Happiness Research Institute, we try to study how do we create good conditions for good lives and how do we improve well-being. But we should also acknowledge that happiness is one human emotion, and so is stress and worry and anxiety and unhappiness. And we all go through that spectrum of emotions as human beings. So I think don't beat yourself up that you're feeling like this. That's a universal human emotion to feel from time to time.
It is what it is, and enjoy that Mike is here with us. That's the happy news. Oh, Carla, we have Carla here on Clubhouse. Hello, Carla, where are you in this moment? Let's see if she's on.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm sorry, there is a bit of noise because I'm getting home.
No worries.
I live in Amsterdam.
All right.
Yes, I am Italian as well, of course. And I have been living in France before moving here for about 10 years. So I wanted to give a little bit of my perspective on this story about the happiness, because I had a very hard time living in France, being a Mediterranean and missing a lot of the human connection that we have naturally. And now that I am here and is more of a Nordic country, I find this feeling again.
All right.
Of connection and of happiness in general. And yeah, so I think that it really is a mix of more things. And I have been as well experimenting a bit of different techniques to make myself happy and to cheer me up when I need. And I found a little bit of a routine at the moment.
Right. Share it with us, the happiness routine, in 3 seconds. I want to know it.
Most important for me, the one that works the best, is really taking note of the things that I'm grateful for
right.
every day and the things that I savored during the day. Because to me, there is a difference between savoring and gratitude. So I can savor a moment with a friend, but at the same time, I can be grateful because the day was sunny, for example. So to me, this is really game changer.
All right.
And noting those things on a journal makes a difference, because then I can realize that actually every day there is something to be happy about. And so I start seeing always the positive in spite of seeing the negative.
So writing, really sorry to interrupt, Carla. So writing down is what you're grateful for is a good habit. Just going to Mike, is it something that you find in research that is something that could be helpful?
I think there is a lot of studies on the value and benefit of a gratitude journal. It doesn't have to be every day. It's also important that it doesn't become another chore we have to do, and also to keep it fresh. But once a week could be a good routine. Write down things we're grateful for or things that we enjoy to do. And then we might use that as a recipe for the days we are feeling down. But I think Carla is really interesting also because you lived in France and now you live in the Netherlands. And it sounds like your happiness levels have gone up from France to the Netherlands. I think it was the 2016 World Happiness Report, which looked at when people migrate to different countries, how does that affect their happiness levels? And they found what you described there. So they found that when a person moves to a happier country, like you move to, so the Netherlands is a happier country than France is on average. If you move to the Netherlands, your happiness levels will go up. So we mitigate towards the happiness level of our host country. So that was just interesting that you are a case of that mechanism as well.
I go to Sarah. By the way, Mike, I was living in Milan, then I moved to Rome, then I moved to Brighton in UK. My wife is British, and well, what I found out anyway is that if you have, you know, happy wife, happy life. You know, if you have a very, very lovely and great environment at home, to me, I mean, I also went through divorce in my previous life. And I mean, it's a completely different universe if you have the right environment at home. So I assume that wherever you are, if you have a great family around or wife or husband or whatever, I assume is the greatest medicine, probably.
Yes. So the best predictor of whether people are happy or not is typically whether they're happy with their relationships. And right. Remember earlier, we talked about these different dimensions of happiness, the life satisfaction, the emotion you experience on a daily basis, the sense of purpose or meaning in life. So different factors impact those different dimensions differently. So as we talked about, money impact life satisfaction, it doesn't impact sense of purpose. Relationships impact all three. So it's one of those factors that have a positive impact on sense of purpose, of sense of satisfaction with life, and what kind of emotions we experience on a daily basis. And also, then, Marco, you're an example of the Harvard study we talked about earlier, because they found what you found. It didn't take you 80 years, so well done.
48 years, but I did it.
That's half the time.
But from all over the world. I saw now Andrea coming from Hamburg. Let's see where Sarah is. Sarah, where are you based?
Hi, Marco. Hi, Mike. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
All right.
South of the United States. And my question actually is linked to this topic of living abroad and being in different environments. So when I am here in the US, I feel that the people around me are generally more positive. People are smiling a lot, saying hello in the street. And that makes me feel happier. So when I go back to Italy, most of the time people, when you ask them, how are you, they start with complaining. It's very common. And start to list all their problems. While here, like even if they are in very critical situation, they always smile at you and say, oh, everything is fine, everything is going well. So I'm one, and I feel happier when I'm here in the US because of this. So I'm just thinking, is it me that I'm tricking my mind and I'm just affected by the environment that I am in, or it's like real happiness? Because I always believe that you find happiness within yourself. But then at the same time, I have this feeling that when I'm in a positive environment, I feel happier. And so I'm like, is it real happiness? Is it just like something I'm just tricking my mind?
It's interesting. Thank you, Sarah. I did a video, Mike, I think a couple of years ago, about how we Italians always complain. And when I moved before COVID from UK to Italy, I arrived. The moment I land, I get a taxi and there is a taxi driver complaining, oh, the weather is so bad and the politicians are bad. Oh, mamma mia. So, and it, always complaining. And then I moved back here to Brighton and people, they do not complain. It's not in the culture, that way of behaving. Every culture is
different. Interesting. So I want to go back to the complaining thing, but Sarah, what matters is how you feel. So if you, I don't think you're tricking yourself. If you feel happy in that environment, of course you're happy. You are the only one who can tell us whether you are happy or not. So I think that's not false happiness. That is real happiness. So that's wonderful. And yes, it does come from within and also from our surroundings. So I think it's both a choice and a perspective, but also a case of the environment we're in. On the complaining bit, which I think is tremendously important, because I hear, like you, Marco, a lot of people saying, oh, I had a French colleague at one point. He said, we're French, we love to complain. And then the following week, I was in Portugal, and my editor said, Portuguese, we love to complain. And then I'm in Estonia, and then an Estonian says, we're Estonians, we love to complain. I think it's not an Italian or French or Estonian thing. I think it's almost a human thing. But in my next life, I'm going to do a complaining research institute. I think we need a global index of complaining, right? Who complains the most? And the question is, how would you create a metric? And I think what we need to do is we need to serve really, really salty soup in a restaurant and then see how many people send the soup back, right? That's the only thing that we're missing from this, I think.
I love it. I love it. I keep going. I keep running because we actually almost out of time. Do you still have 5 more minutes, Mike? We have many questions, but I'll just pick a couple. Alberica. I see Alberica.
Hi.
Hello, Alberica. Where are you based?
I'm based in Milan, actually. And thank you very much, Marco, for this international room, finally.
Yeah.
So I have a very quick question to make. How would you relate serenity to happiness? Like, is serenity key to happiness, besides the fact that happiness comes from the fact that we achieve our goals, what we give value for, and that we have the approval of the people around us? What is the role to serenity to you with happiness?
How would you define serenity?
Oh, I lost Alberica. She'll be back.
Okay.
Accidentally touched the button and she disappeared. Alberica, okay. Back. Come back. I don't know where are you. Oh, there you are. Wait. I'm sorry. There you are.
You can tell the audience you didn't like my question.
I didn't like it. Out. No, how do you define serenity, Alberica?
I think serenity is something that like gives you calm inside. Like that's how, so if you're calm inside, that is something that then gives you like the base to then be happy. So that's why I'm asking you, do you think we can be happy without that?
Let me say, I think it's easier to be happy with it. Because I think it comes down to, or comes back to, I believe it was Marcus Aurelius who said, you know, happiness is not having a lot of possessions, but having few wants. And I think serenity is being at peace with who we are and what we have, and not striving for more and something else. And I think also, again, distinguishing between what we can and cannot control. So I think you can be happy without, but I think it helps. And I think that's important to say, I think for a lot of things that impact happiness, you know, we can be happy without those things, but I think serenity would be a useful tool to have in the happiness backpack.
Close this Q&A improvised session. And thank you so much, by the way, Mike, to be
again. This is fun.
House Q&A random questions. I don't know how you say your name. Hair Zakiri Hair. So sorry
hello,
for my pronunciation.
Hello, Marco. Yes, it's a little bit strange. My name. My name is pronounced Ayer.
Ayer.
It's like in English it's Ayer, but it's another story about that.
All right. Where are you from?
I'm from Albania, based in Albania, in Tiran.
Okay.
And it's very interesting about this international room, about the happiness, you know, and I'm very happy that also I'm here and to discuss about what actually is happiness and to have the right answers about the mic. And
I like here that you are happy about being here talking about happiness. I mean, it's a, kind of, it's a good
and look. This is the main goal, you know. This is the main objective, and this is very important to know and to have the courage after that to accept this. And for this perspective, for me, is very important. But I have one question for Mike, that you know, also for our nation, Mediterranean nation, is about complaining and also interacting, social, everything else. But when you are in the position that about around other people, that maybe this is a lot of complaining, but you must possibly to live with that and to have a life, you know. And what is the main? What is the main?
Factor
yes to live, or what to do in this case to avoid, or to what is the best to know yourself better. This is the main question.
I like it. Thank you so much. Basically, to close our conversation, the question is how can we be happy, Mike? This is that giving recipe to be happy forever.
I want to come back to what we talked about earlier, the relationships. I think if we are to bet on one factor, a lot of factors, a lot of roads leads to not only Rome, but happiness. But I think focusing on relationships, making sure we are surrounded by good people, by loved ones, spending time with them, enjoying things together. I think that's one of the best things we can do. And I know it's difficult times. We have to be socially distant now because of the pandemic, but I think there's still ways to connect across space.
I love it, Mike. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to have this.
Likewise. Chat. Likewise.
And good luck for your books and all Italian guys listening to this conversation. Have a look at Mike's book coming out in March, Italian version. So it's going to be interesting. If you like this topic, Mike is, as you've seen, fantastic. So Mike,
thank you, Marco. And that's the Little Book of Luca, I think, coming out in March in Italy.
Fantastic. Mike, let's keep in touch and good luck for everything.
Thank you. Likewise. Bye-bye.